This week, we talk with a brother of the Jewish faith about his particular experience in Freemasonry. Is Freemasonry compatible with Judaism? What's it like to join a fraternity that's overwhelmingly Christian, who uses a Jewish text as the foundation for the allegory, and being Jewish in the fraternity? This week we're talking to Brother Sean Rothberg and gaining a unique perspective on the craft. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 546. I want to thank the contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. You have been the sole way we have been able to talk about Freemasonry on this podcast since July of 2011. I thank you all so much for your continued support. And if you're curious on how you can help support Masonic education through the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. Additionally, we've got some items in our limited edition shop and, of course, the bookstore, where you can find books, my personal recommended reading lists, books by those who have been on the show, and, of course, their recommendations. All the links are back through Amazon, and they are Amazon affiliate links. They don't cost you anything, but when you make the sale through those links, Amazon puts a little bit back to the show. In the news, I want to thank Illumination Lodge number 5 here in Illinois for having me out to do a short talk on traditional observance masonry, or observant masonry, or intentional masonry, whatever you want to call it. It is Freemasonry, and there's a lot of hoopla about TO Masonry and all of these different kinds of things. You know, we shouldn't hyphenate Masonry, but as Sean Iyer has pointed out, you know, we've got daylight lodges, we've got lodges of research, so why not differentiate to say, hey, the TO Lodge has a more intentional experience? In any case, again, I want to thank Illumination Lodge for having me out. I also want to thank my good friend and brother, our audio consultant for the WCY podcast, Brother Adam Hassel. Recently, Brother Adam, he is a lodge education officer for his lodge, Sequoia 827 in Antioch, Illinois. And he decided he wanted to put on a symposium, so he coerced Brother Scott Duball, Spencer Hammond, and myself to do 3 lectures in a single evening at his lodge in the limited space that we have there, because it is a nice, intimate setting of a lodge. And we had about 30 people RSVP, which would have been at max capacity. We had a few fall off because of COVID, that they may have had exposure and whatnot. So we appreciate those brothers for not wanting to potentially spread to other folks. But it was a great night. And I want to say that Brother Spencer Hammond did a wonderful job on his tarot presentation. Brother Duball is always an exceptional person to listen to, from his pauses in what he's talking about to the imagery he uses. It's always fun. But most of all, I just love how open these brothers were with their presentations and how good they did. It was awesome. I did Esoterics 101, and I hope people that were there enjoyed it. I think this kind of small, intimate setting educational event is really interesting, and to be honest, could be the real future of Freemasonry, as we have these giant Masonic conventions with presenters and things. Then we see these smaller events kind of take over as education becomes more and more the norm across the American Masonic experience. Now, speaking of presentations and something that's really, really exciting, illustrious Brother Harrison, he's going to be doing a presentation at Liberty Lodge on Monday the 23rd. So, literally, the day after you're hearing this, or the morning of, he's going to be doing Freemasonry's Journey West, and every attendee gets a free book that Steve has written covering the same material. Non-Masons are invited. There's no dinner, no cost. Okay, so it's going to start at 7 p.m. And here's the really cool part. the Grand Master of Missouri has declared this an official bicentennial event, and Missouri Masons attending will receive the Bicentennial Medal. That is awesome. So if you have the ability to go, definitely go. If you've got regular plans for a Monday evening, push them out. Liberty Lodge is located on 10 East Franklin in Liberty, Missouri. Again, Freemasonry's Journey West. Everybody's going to get a free book. It's open to everybody. It's a free event, and Missouri Masons who go, are going to get this cool Bicentennial Medal. That is awesome. So, please go. Please check it out. Illustrious Brother Harrison is no schlub when it comes to presenting. He is amazing. As you heard in the opener, we've got an interview here with Brother Sean Rothberg. Let's go ahead and get into that right now. All right, everybody, we're back this week, and I've got a special guest on the program, Brother Sean Rothberg. Brother Sean is a regular Mason, and I wanted to go ahead and let him introduce himself here. So, Brother Sean, if you could give us a little bit of background on when you became a Mason, where you hail from, and anything you're involved in.
Thank you, Brother Johnson. I've been a Mason for 8 years. I hail from Richardson, Texas, at Richardson Masonic Lodge, number 1214. I've been a brother for 8 years. And I am a current junior deacon. If tradition prevails, I will be a junior warden next Masonic year. I'm also a Scottish Rite Mason and a companion in chapter and council, and a member of Texas Lodge of Research, currently writing my paper, but that's probably going to take another 5 to 10 years because I'm also in school, mostly full-time. And yeah, I'm a founder of a Facebook group called the Masonic Keepa with over 288 brothers worldwide from America all the way to Australia and Israel and England. So, yeah, I am an active brother and an involved brother at that of the Jewish faith.
I commend you for coming on and actually putting some of this out there, because some of the guys listening, some of the people listening worldwide, right, they might be wondering, what is Brother Sean on for? Well, he's on because he's an expert. He's a subject matter expert, essentially, in this area of something that I think a lot of Freemasons, especially today, might be curious about. And that is essentially what I might call reconciliations with perhaps some interesting parts of the Masonic system and its practices and what it's based on when viewed through the lens of someone who practices the Jewish faith. Brother Sean, he came into the fraternity 8 years ago, and can you talk a little bit about the stage and practice of your faith that you were in when you came into Freemasonry as Orthodox Jew, and what that was like for you? Because as some people might know, of course, brothers know, but people who are not initiated into Freemasonry might not know, a lot of what we do centers around this allegory of Old Testament stuff. And as we go up in other degrees, like you mentioned, you are in the Scottish Rite, and you're also in the Royal Arch and Council, some of that stuff starts to get a little bit heavier, I think, in relation to practiced religions. And so being somebody who was Orthodox at the time you come in, can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah. So I always, whenever I think about the day I walked into Lodge, I always laugh at it because, first of all, to understand my background, I grew up Reform, which I would say is eating shrimp on Saturday morning while watching cartoons, stuff you're not really supposed to do based on the Torah, the Gemara, the Mishnah, the Talmud, all that stuff. And then throughout my own cycle of my own life experiences, I became more traditional and then more Orthodox. So the day I walked into Lodge, my tzitzis, which are the white strings that you see Orthodox Jews wear, were hanging low, my yarmulke on, walked in, and everyone's like, "Hello, how are you? Who are you?" And I told him that my dad was also a brother. And once I told my dad that I got my petition, he was like, wait, they could blackball you because you're Jewish, based in his era when he was raised in 1969. So I became initiated and raised all in under 3 months. And then I had a Jewish, I would say a religious snap of some sort. I stopped keeping the Sabbath, and then I later petitioned for Scottish Rite, which in the Dallas jurisdiction is on Saturday, which is the Jewish Sabbath. So I had to juggle, knowing I'm probably going to be observant at one point. I could do it now, but all the degrees are on Saturday. Went through Scottish Rite. I was, for the brothers listening, I was the candidate for the 18th degree, which I think is the most hilarious thing ever for a Jewish brother to be a candidate of, if you know anything about the 18th degree.
Sure, yeah, Sean, for people who don't know, the 18th degree, both in the northern and southern jurisdiction, has a lot to do with some very heavy Christian overtones.
Yeah, it was probably the most ironic thing I've ever experienced. And then at that point, I became a noble. I demitted later on. But then recently I became a companion, decided to do chapter and council, which they had a festival with chapter and council in one day, also on a Saturday, which really from my view, I don't appreciate. However, I respect the other brothers' faith because Saturday is not their holy day. So I did the whole chapter and council in one day. A really amazing experience if you didn't fall asleep during some of the other degrees, if you've ever experienced those. But all in all, being Jewish right now is hard because you want to be more traditional. You want to go to shul on Saturday. You want to keep the Sabbath. However, a lot of Masonic stuff happens to be on Saturday, at least in the southern jurisdiction. And I spoke to a Scottish Rite brother who is a 33rd and Jewish. He was raised Orthodox, but now he's more Reform. So he kind of flopped with me. And he said, and I'll never forget it, put your commitments first. If your commitment is Masonry, put it in front of Judaism. Put it in front of Yiddishkeit, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is Hebrew for the Holy One, blessed be the name, aka God, would understand. However, from an Orthodox view, reading Kabbalistic texts, reading from Rabbi R.A. Kaplan, reading from Rashi, Rambam, Rabbeinu Tam, all the other sages, they would say no. So in a way, being more of a traditional Orthodox Jew and dealing with Masonry that conflicts on Saturday is a major conflict. It is something that I wish we could change. However, Jews are a minority, and plus we're a niche within the niche within Masonry. Most Masons are of the Christian faith. We understand that. The Jews who are brothers would like some things at least not on Saturday, but again, there's not that many Orthodox Jews in the southern jurisdiction. I know a bunch in the northern jurisdiction and actually some in Australia. So we have to realize what we can do within our limited days of the week is the best way I would put it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a wonderful point. Growing up myself, right, like I grew up in the Roman Catholic faith. My family's all from basically Sicily. And we moved to the Chicagoland area, and I went to private schools that were Lutheran. And then I also had like kind of a religious snap. I became a deist. And so through that, it has been an interesting lens as well. Of course, I could never know some of the turmoils and struggles that someone else might go through, but I have an idea, right? I mean, let's face it. There are ideologies that are at play within Christianity. The overwhelming majority of brothers, as you mentioned, are of the Christian faith. And we're not allowed to do things like open lodge on a Sunday, right? Because that's the holy day
You can't do that either.
So that's interesting, right? So we've got this, I guess, sort of set of rules I think at times I feel like it's not my playground, but they let me play there. And I think that might be what some people feel like at other times also.
Yeah, because you have to work with what you're given. You have to work around what is the bylaws, the laws of your jurisdiction. And it's just like you, we can't open lodge on Sunday. We can do some things, but we can't open lodge. And it's just hard because I would love to see all the degrees in Scottish Rite, but not on the Saturday. I know during installation in July, when I will be, if tradition prevails, a junior warden as of this time, installation is on the Saturday. And I would love to be part of the photo and with the current worshipful master. But I won't be able to. But I will. Like, I don't keep the Sabbath right now. I don't really keep kosherous. I keep kosher style, which is really what you read in the Torah, but then it breaks down in the Gemara over what is kosherous, aka kosher, and how you're supposed to do that, why you have to have separate saints and all that. But it's like that struggle. It's like a tug of war inside my head going on. And I know some other brothers who they dealt with that. And for someone who came in Orthodox, like didn't do anything Saturday, at one point I was engaged and it was a kosher engagement and dealt with so much, the other brothers have seen things and they know that I'm like struggling religiously, which is a great thing to admit because it shows you're humble about it. But the ironic part is, being Jewish, other people will come up to me asking me like, hey, do you know about the Behar? Do you know about like the Gemara? Do you know about all this? And they start asking religious questions and they keep asking like, can you give a talk on the book of Genesis? And I'm like, oh, Bereishis. Yeah, Bereishis Bara Elokim. The first three words of the Torah in Hebrew. So it's like they just laugh at that, but they keep asking me questions even though I don't come to lodge anymore with a kippah, but I am involved with Jewish brothers worldwide. But it is really funny about that, with having an identity inside the lodge. And then when I go to shul, I now have the identity of being a brother. It's like a dual identity, which is probably the coolest thing. But yet it's really fun because other brothers still come up to me and will say, hey, did you hear about the red cow that they found or something? And I'm like, no, I didn't. But yeah, it's just really interesting, the stuff that I deal with.
So having grown up Reformed, you know, a lot of the things that I think our brethren are curious about. What's interesting about this is overwhelmingly the vast majority of Freemasonry today, the people that are joining, do have an inclination toward learning a lot more about the philosophy and the spirituality and necessarily like the roots and deeper kind of things that are buried within the ritual. And the ritual is based on Old Testament things. I mean, even in the Grand Lodge of Illinois, within our, what we call our intender program, the third degree book essentially says that every Master Mason should find themselves to be at least having a cursory understanding of the Jewish mystic work, the Kabbalah. I mean, I think that's great because I think that these topics are awesome for study, but I mean, I don't know if somebody could have like a cursory the Kabbalah is such a tome and it is so, people spend lifetimes studying it, right? And so with these people that are coming into Freemasonry now are a little bit more interested in Hebrew and the Gematria and the Kabbalah and all of these other things. So as you mentioned, people kind of ask you about these. Do you find it a rewarding kind of thing to be able to explain these things, or how do you normally go about that?
Excellent question. I'm okay telling people certain things, but also through my, I would say, five heavy years of being a practicing Orthodox Jew, but dealt with so much in those years. I'm okay talking to people about Kabbalah and about the mysticism, about the Torah. I'm okay with that. But I'm also very hesitant because I will start throwing out phrases that they don't know. for example, a lot of people will dive into Albert Pike, Morals and Dogma, and understand certain things which Albert Pike would say. Albert Pike was not Jewish. He learned Hebrew, so he learned certain things. But me personally, I'm hesitant to understand the knowledge of someone who didn't grow up practicing that. Now, as a traditionalist, answering everything, I would say to people who want to know answers, first of all, Kabbalah says in the Zohar, which is where Kabbalah is from, you have to be 40 years old, married with a boy and a girl, two kids. Firstly, you have to know the Chumash backwards and forward. You have to know the Mishnah and Gemara. You have to know the Midrashim. You have to know all that kind of stuff before you learn basic Kabbalah. Basic Kabbalah could be as small thing as saying a bracha and an angel flying from the apple that you say a bracha over, Brei Pri Hayetz, flying up to Shemaim and saying, yay, this Jew said a bracha. That was one small thing I learned when I was in yeshiva, which is Jewish school, and I went to Eish HaTorah in Yerushalayim for 2 months in the summer of 2013. So that's like a small basic Kabbalah thing. So to answer certain people when they've asked me, like, have I studied the Bahir? Have I studied anything from, like, small stuff? What would you recommend? I tell them, do you understand what Kabbalah is? Do you understand mysticism? Do you know esotericism, Jewish esotericism, before you dive into everything else? And, of course, they don't. They talk about Christian esotericism, Christian Kabbalah, with a Q or C. I can never remember the spelling of that one. However, in Hebrew, it's spelled with a Kuf, which is a K. So I tell them, like, if you want to learn anything mystifying, mysticism, you could always check Rabbi R.A. Kaplan of Blessed Memory. He is a rabbi who wrote a lot of books in English. But even in English, it's hard to understand stuff. The easiest way for me to tell people, and right now I'm going through the Daf Yomi, which is the Gemara, the Mishnah and Gemara, every day. So I'm learning a lot more Jewish stuff. What I would tell anyone who is interested in learning the Jewish side of Kabbalah, mysticism, the Torah, check Rabbi Ari Kaplan. However, also be aware that it's almost like jumping from reading Goosebumps books all the way to reading Steinbeck or Faulkner or Held. Jumping from R.L. Stine, great author, by the way, Goosebumps, jumping all the way into Dostoevsky, Crime and Punishment, stuff like that. Because you understand certain things, but you don't understand everything. So for the brothers and the listeners who want to learn more, learn your basics. The rabbis at Eish HaTorah would say you have to have your roots cemented, grounded first, before you can blossom. And Masonry is the same way. Before you understand chapter and council, understand the basics of Blue Lodge Masonry. Understand everything. Be a steward. Be a chaplain. Be a master of ceremonies. Before you dive deeper into growing. So, coming from the traditional side and from Brother Rothberg's side, I would be hesitant in talking deeply about stuff because not many people understand just the basic foundations, the basic fundamentals of the Jewish faith. So
I think that's sorry to sound a little arrogant,
a little harsh on that, but that's coming from me and from, even from, like, if you ask an Orthodox rabbi, teach me Kabbalah, they're going to be like, no.
Well, yeah, this is a really excellent answer, in my opinion. And I'll tell you why. It's because I studied philosophy and religion and mathematics. And we always say, when we're teaching math, right, that any weakness you have in any part of mathematics stems from a misunderstanding or a misstep you had in an earlier lesson in mathematics. Because as we teach it, it's foundational, meaning you build upon the things. So, like, I would never expect, you know, to teach somebody an advanced concept, right? You're not gonna go up to somebody who doesn't know how to do addition and then start talking about emergent theory and physics, right? Even though physics and mathematics are not the same subject, they are related. Like you have to found it. You have to lay perfect foundations, or as best foundations as you can, before going on. And in my opinion, right, it's kind of like saying, if Freemasonry had this mystical art of mathematics, oh, tell me about algebra. Tell me about algebra, Sean. And you go, whoa, I need you to check out these other things called addition and subtraction, dividing and multiplying first. When you got those down, we can have some beginning conversations about algebra, right?
And there'll be people that ask, like, about Adam and Eve, the creation, and they'll bring up the Sefer Yetzirah, which is Hebrew for the Book of Creation. And I'm like, do you understand the basics? Do you understand who Adam and Eve were? And just like what you're saying about mathematics and physics, you have to know the addition and have to know the multiplication table before you learn calculus. Otherwise, you'd be crying in the back, tearing apart the math textbook.
Exactly. As we talked a little bit about coming into the fraternity and your experience, I would be remiss if I also didn't tackle some of the difficult topics that sometimes affect brothers of minorities. Did you ever feel like you had a difficulty coming in with biases or anti-Semitism or anything like that within the fraternity?
I'm a completely open book on everything. So my dad, like I brought up earlier, he was raised in 90 days, the earliest at that time, raised in 1969 in James Ladd Burgess, which the lodge is not around anymore, I heard. And he said, admitting that you're Jewish in Masonry, they will blackball you. However, I was informed by a past master who actually said, no, they won't. In a way, they will let you in. Now, I didn't feel any prejudice. As a Jew, I did not feel any anti-Semitism, nothing. The only thing I felt was things happening on Saturday, and at the time I didn't do anything on Saturday except go to shul and eat a lot of gefilte fish and matzo ball soup. But besides that, I couldn't go into any Masonic stuff. So I didn't really, I felt like I was missing out. And that was the only thing I really felt. But then when others heard that, hey, we have a Jewish brother here, all of a sudden everyone's like, oh my gosh, we have a Jewish brother. Like, tell me your secrets. And then I felt like I was the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, which is kind of ironic now that I'm a companion, but I'm not a high priest. I didn't feel any prejudice. And for any brothers who are wondering, no. And for anyone who isn't a brother listening, who is Jewish, no one's going to have any anti-Semitism, except from what I've been told by other brothers, small lodges and small counties, countries, like small towns, and like Vermilla and Nowheresville may have some stuff the chaplain may say in Jesus' name instead of in the great architect's name, stuff like that. And I have heard chaplains say that. And I just rolled my eyes and then afterwards I said, I love your prayer, but I would appreciate if you'd go a little more non-denominational. But I'm not going to put you on Masonic charges for saying Jesus. No.
So I have experienced this quite a bit. Just the fact that we do find that in, I'll say it, like the Bible Belt, essentially, in the United States, we do see a lot of small lodges, country lodges, and even lodges in big cities along the belt there, we do tend to see a overly Christianized version of the fraternity. I mean, I've seen pictures of lodges in Texas where there's like the portrait of Jesus over the secretary's chair. And
really?
when I inquired about it, they said, well, we've got a commandery who meets here, so it's okay. And I'm like, is it really?
You have a commandery in my lodge, and they're not going to do that.
So, this is what I mean. I mean, so we definitely do have kind of a push that way. I feel like in more, I hate to use the term cosmopolitan, but I think in the more cosmopolitan type Freemasonry that we see across the United States, we recognize that we've got brothers from many different faiths, and however, whatever of a minority they are, we've got this new consciousness that seems to want to be accepting, and not only accepting, Sean, but like encouraging of more diversity and more opinions and worldviews. And it's kind of cool to see. I mean, I really love the experience. We get such a colorful experience going to lodge, I think, in different areas, specifically lodges that have such like a wide gamut of people from different backgrounds. Like if you go to a lodge in Washington, D.C., for instance, holy cow, there's like 20 languages in the lodge. It's pretty amazing, and it's really kind of inspirational.
First of all, you brought up Washington, D.C., in my Facebook group. We actually had the past Grand Master of D.C., Brother Right Worshipful Robert Starr, who's Jewish. And he's a little bit older, but he was a Grand Master of D.C., I believe, in 2012 or in the last 20 years. So, I mean, talk about diversity right there.
It's pretty awesome to see. What are your thoughts on some of the more, I don't know how to say this. I mean, I don't mean this to be insulting to anyone out there who might study certain things I say. Please don't hold me to, you know, I'm not pointing you out specifically. But what are your feelings on some brothers out there who study some kind of like fringe things with Masonry that start to, they'll like go and they learn some Hebrew and then they start lecturing on the true secrets of Masonry and things of this nature. Have you seen some of that?
Yes.
And what are your, like, do you have any kind of feelings about that? Is it dangerous? You know, a lot of times we say, you know, live and let live, right? Or we say that we should be whispering good counsel in the ear of an erring brother. And, you know, kindly aiding his reformation. Have we gotten to a point where we have this thing on Facebook, which is Refracted Light, a great Facebook group? We had so much online education and we had a lot of people talking, you know, the last 2 years about Kabbalah, about Hebrew and the secret meanings of different things. And I'm just curious on your opinion of those things.
Like I've said it a lot in our talk, there's a tug of war in me. There's like the secular side and the Yiddish side. And I kind of am going to be a little conservative on this and lean more on the Jewish side and say, anyone can learn any language. Anyone can learn anything. Amazon is a great place to buy books. I can tell many people websites to buy books from. And when you're teaching, when brothers are saying like the secret of the three, the number 3, 3, 5, 7. It starts getting more philosophical, hypothetical. And it's like, what do you know? You're kind of pulling legs here. It's a big stretch. So whenever I hear brothers talking about the number 33 in the Torah and all that, I'm like, first of all, what do you know? Secondly, do you mind if I call a couple of rabbis over and listen to, and hear you talk? Because maybe they might correct you in a few things, but all this like Jewish mysticism, Kabbalah, everything, and if anyone gets offended, I am sorry, but this is how the rabbis, the sages, all taught it, and it's still taught to this day. We do, and it's very Masonic in this order, we do not teach non-Jews certain things. It sounds very prejudiced. We like to hold our secrets. And that's why, even for other Jews, they don't learn Kabbalah because they don't meet the requirements to understand true Kabbalah. There's been stories, I cannot think of the person off the top of my head, but it was written in the Gemara that there was a guy who learned Kabbalah, and he didn't understand the basics, and he went insane. And since then, that's why they put restrictions on certain things. So whenever I hear brothers talking who are not Jewish, talking about the secrets of Freemasonry, or even non-brothers who love Freemasonry and they do all this Kabbalah stuff and then they bring it in. Whether it's true or not, it's a dangerous act. It's a dangerous tool. That's why when a Jew learns Kabbalah, they study under a rabbi who accepts them, and a true prominent rabbi. It says in Perkei Avos, make yourself a rabbi. Perkei Avos chapter 1, verse 4, I believe, or 2, 3. It's in the book 1. Make yourself a rabbi, which in the commentary says, make yourself a prominent rabbi who is accepted by others, who is accepted by other rabbis and the community, and not a blackballed rabbi or teacher. So I can go on a whole rant of that, Brother Johnson, but I hope what I said kind of sums up everything.
Of course. I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the work you do with your Facebook group. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Facebook group is all about, what it aims to do, and anything else you'd like us to know about it?
So I once started a Jewish Facebook group, and I looked up a couple of years ago. There were two Facebook groups, one Jewish Freemasons, apostrophe S, and then one called Orthodox Jewish Mason. I will come back to the Orthodox Jewish Mason in just a minute. I started a Facebook group called Jewish Freemasons with no apostrophe S. I promoted it on Proud to be a Freemason, Texas Freemason, others, saying, hey, I'm looking for Jewish brothers around the world. And believe it or not, I pissed off a lot of brothers because immediately when you put Jewish Freemason, everyone wants to join. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, you're going to talk about your secrets. Again, we're talking about that baloney salami. And so I just got it going a couple, and then after a while, during the pandemic of 2019, I contacted the owner of Orthodox Jewish Mason, Brother Shlomo Bariel from New York. Hello, Brother Shlomo. And I said, hey, we're all in lockdown. We're all locked at home. Why don't we have a Zoom call? And since then, every week, we always talk about something Jewish or Masonic or Jewish Masonic, or we do something called Scotch and Schmooze, which schmooze is Yiddish for talk. We do that every week. And now my Facebook group called the Masonic Kippa has now have over 280 brothers worldwide from America all the way to Israel, Australia. Some amazing brothers in Australia. Actually, a couple of them are rabbis, believe it or not, Chabad rabbis. And that is an interesting talk right there. So my group is just a group for Jewish brothers from around the world, whether you're a practicing Jew or a high holiday Jew, meaning Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, to just talk, introduce yourself. And then Brother Shlomo's group, Orthodox Jewish Mason, is for more Orthodox traditional brothers. So we co-op, but we reach out to different Jewish brothers. And my group, the Masonic Kippa, is just for any Jew who's a brother worldwide to come and be part of others. However, I will let you know that there are three questions I ask, because I always have to make sure someone is not a spammer. Two, if they're Jewish, and three, if they're a brother. I have let EAs in, and I tell them to please introduce yourself as an EA so we all know, and update us on when your passing and your raising is. So there's that, and based on that, Brother Shlomo and I have actually had interviews from different newspapers in the United States talk about our groups, because while our groups are separate, we work very closely together. And that is brotherly love and something called and Jewish love, which is in Hebrew is the word kal, K-L-A-L, just community. So you'll hear some Jews talk about Klal Yisrael, community of Israel. This is Klal Masonry, Klal Israel. So, yeah, so that's my group.
That is so awesome to hear that it's a meeting place, and it's a place where, honestly, is really kind of inspiring, because we see a number of Grand Lodges that adopt their requirements to become a Master Mason, and a lot of times we find that there are some even smaller minority groups than say, even deists or people who are practicing the Jewish faith. We find certain groups of people who are, Florida, for instance, a few years ago had the case with an Odinist. We also had cases of pagans who have been admitted, and then new grandmasters come in and expel them. And there's all these kinds of interesting things about the belief in supreme beings. And, you know, honestly, the thing I like about your group is, aside from it's there, right? And it's awesome, yeah. is this idea that, I don't want to say a support group, but I want to say, like, it's a cool place to have that additional camaraderie. And anybody out there who might be thinking, oh, well, that's kind of unfair or whatever, all I'll say is, like, well, you know, hey, there's the whole Knight Templar thing, right? Like, let's talk about how Templars, when they try to pass... Well, yeah. So a couple, right? So last year at the Grand Encampment level, they attempted to pass something called the Attestation of Faith, which basically was a really strict Trinitarian definition of what a Christian Mason is, and would be then the requirement for anybody from that point on to become a Knight Templar. And of course, everybody else would just be grandfathered in, because they can't be bothered with, you know, losing the dues. So let me ask you about the Knight Templar, right? You talked about, you said you've joined Chapter and Council, and you're a companion. What are your views on the Knight Templar, for say? Because we do have, I mean, I've got a brother of mine, Scott Sherman, who's up in Massachusetts. He became a Templar also, but I've never talked to Brother Scott about that, and I'm sure he'll reach out to me after this episode and he'll tell me about it. I'm curious on your thoughts there.
Okay. I'm going to have to backtrack and say to any brothers out there, yes, my group is for Jewish Freemasons, Masons who are Jewish. I am being prejudiced. I'm sorry. And I do encourage any and all brothers of the Catholic, Methodist, Protestant faith, etc., create your own Facebook group. Create a niche within a niche. I encourage that, because as much as we say faith should not be an issue, which I'm about to get into Knights Templar issue, I do say that we do connect to brothers of the same faith. So I would love to see brothers start a Catholic Freemasons group, a Methodist, a Protestant, Episcopalian, Anglican. I encourage any and all brother to actually do that. Now, Knights Templar, being Jewish. The uniforms are awesome. I'm going to just sit flat out and say that. The uniforms are awesome. I see brothers in Fort Worth and Dallas all around wearing the Knights Templar. Their white mohawk hair, I don't know what it's called, but it looks so cool. But I've asked other knights, can you kind of wave the Christian thing for me? And I've had brothers say, other companions say, sorry, but the wording is kind of there, but they've had Jews do that, because again, it's like, you don't have to be Christian, but you have to like kind of stand up for the Christian faith, which is not saying you have to be Christian or not. I mean, I stand up for the Christian faith. I have my own faith. So there is an issue about that. And actually, Brother Shlomo told me that there used to be a branch of York Rite that was for people who didn't want to go to the Knights Templar, but wanted to go into something called the Order of Maccabeus. I've only found it on a Reddit forum, but I haven't found anything else. I know Brother Shlomo and I are wanting to start that back up for companions who are not of the Christian faith or want to do something different, but that's neither here nor there. But the Knights Templar, I really would love to join, but I also know that, first of all, I don't want to spread myself too thin. We've all been told, don't go, unless you decide to like go to every Masonic event every day of the week, kind of put all your eggs in one basket. Don't spread them out. I just really wish the Knights Templar was more non-denominational. But again, I live in Dallas, I live in Texas, I live in the Bible Belt where we say y'all and we eat chili without beans. Besides that, I really wish the Knights Templar was more non-denominational. But I can't change that because I'm just going to sound like a brother who's fetching and we have enough of those already.
All good. I certainly can empathize with you on certain aspects. You talked about the Order of Maccabees.
Yeah, and I love Hebrew prophets, by the way.
So it's really interesting. I did look up something on this a few years ago, and I think there was a chapter local in Chicago, and I learned about it. I think it was through my brother Hilton Kaufman, who's been, so he's Jewish, and he's also African-American. His mom, I can't remember which was African-American, either his dad or his mom, but he grew up in Chicago in those days, and he is one of the people who told me about his struggles when he went through. He said that they wouldn't let a Jew see the 18th degree in his day, and I was like, oh, wow. And he's like, yeah, they'd let us in, but they had to call us all into a room and talk to us about the 18th degree before we could witness it.
I was the candidate in the 18th degree for my festival, which I think was the funniest thing I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, I mean, so when he talked to me about this, he also had mentioned that there were, at that time, it was kind of looser around the requirements to be, you know, recognized as a group or a club or whatever. He said that at the time that there were several, like, Jewish Masonic clubs around Chicago where men of the Jewish faith would gather who were also happen to be Masons. And in a way, it's kind of reminiscent of what you're doing, although, you know, you've got over 280 people spanning the globe. You know, these are probably smaller groups, but I imagine a lot of the same conversations and things might be coming up in the 21st century version, what you're doing, and, you know, possibly what was happening in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Local small clubs around, you know, Chicago, or insert your large city here.
And you want to talk about something that I witnessed recently. Prejudice against the fellow Jew from a few Jewish ladies is I'm currently single and I'm putting my should have resume on several Facebook dating sites and I mentioned how I'm active in my Masonic Lodge. I've had several women who are like, you need to get out of the Masons. And I'm like, why? And of course, no one responds. But it's interesting hearing the prejudice from Jews against Masons, which I just think is the funniest thing I've ever heard. But I've talked to my brothers, my Jewish brothers, about stuff like that, and they've actually experienced certain things. And you want to talk about community with similar values, we brought up anti-Masonry within the Jewish faith. And it's always from the older crowd who say, like, y'all worship the devil or something like that, or y'all don't know who y'all worship. From an Orthodox perspective, for anyone, because this isn't something that you'll never hear someone admit, Orthodox Jews like to talk with other Orthodox Jews or other Jews. They don't want to be around goyim. Sorry, but there is that within Orthodox Jews. And one of the anti-Masonry things that goes on within the Orthodox community is you're around goyim. And goyim will persuade you to do certain things. It's like the snake in the garden. It's going to make you do things like commit adultery and idolatry and all this other stuff. And we have to tell them, no, it doesn't. There's brothers in my lodge who I've met who are ministers. One is an ex-minister. One is a current minister. It's like, no, being Jewish, they almost like guard you more because you're the chosen people. So I just wanted to say that it's just funny how certain things you'll witness from your own people and you almost have to stand up for it. And I know the Catholics dealt with that with the Pope. So it's an interesting similarity.
Yeah, totally agree. My family, you know, being a Roman Catholic, and then, you know, very much, it's so weird.
You know what the difference between Catholics and Jews are?
What's that?
Jews are born with guilt. Catholics have to go to church to learn about it.
So you know, true.
A Jewish mother will spank her child and make the child feel guilty for hurting her hand.
Well, what's funny is, like, my family said things like, oh man, you better be careful, Robert. You know, this could be, I've heard some things, you know, the Pope says, blah, 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 blah. Man, what are you talking about? The Pope says, like, you've gone to church in the last 3 years. I'm like, hey, I go on the Christmas and I go on the holiday. It's like, okay, you go on the high holidays. That's great, great, great job. Okay. But what's really funny is, like, they go, oh, you guys do all that mystical stuff. And I'm like, taking a sacrament and thinking it's going to turn into the blood in your stomach, is that not really mystical stuff too? Let's get real here. Mystical to mystical. I mean, it's not really a difference.
If you want to have mystical, yeah. If I'm Jewish, I'm going to make sure I have a kosher knife with a goat. But there's really none of that. So, for the shechet goat, I want to at least have a shechet there to actually have some nice goat burgers. I keep telling people the question. Like, I had one Orthodox Jew. He said, sounds like you're in a cult. And I go, okay, so would you say Orthodox Judaism is a cult? And he goes, no, and he starts talking halachic stuff. And I tell him, yeah, there's some cultish things, but in Masonry, if I leave Masonry, people are going to ask me why, and they're going to confront me, but they're going to say, you know what? Door is always open for you to come back. Enjoy your life. The rings, because we always have to have that one Masonic ring with the stone in it.
Yeah. Something that I always found important is, like, the sense of community within religious communities, in that you find a group of people that you have a similar belief structure with, that you can, you know, at least in your mind, trust maybe more than other people, that you can give your secrets and your thoughts to without fear of judgment, because they know the foundation from which those thoughts or fears or whatever may have been born, right? Because they've been there too. And I think that's true with Masonry. It's true with our religions. And I just think that, you know, it's important to have that community. And in part, what you talked about earlier, having this, you know, Jewish community online, and you mentioned having, you know, like a Catholic forum for Masons or Protestant or whatever else, I think that that could also provide some sense of community for some of those brothers if they feel that they needed it.
I think that would be ideal. I know a lot of brothers would say it doesn't matter what faith you are, but yet we're still talking about this call, this community. And we have a Masonic community. It's okay to have a more of a niche, a minute community for the Catholics, the Protestants and Muslims and anyone else, because we could do something. If I were to fly to New York and meet Brother Shlomo and the other brothers in New York, first of all, we could probably get a minion of 10 Jewish men who are brothers to do a prayer service, to do chakras, mecha, mar, which would be awesome to see. While we're all praying, we're all Jews, we're all brothers with the, of course, that nice blue or red or black stone Masonic ring that we all have to have on our finger. But it would be cool just to start like a revolution within Masonry of having smaller communities of the same faith that go together. Because I know in my lodge, we have our secretary who is Jewish, another brother Brother Bruce Neustadt, and Brother Gilman, our secretary, and Brother Neustadt all go to the same synagogue, and they see each other. I don't go to Reform Synagogue, but I have ran into another brother, Brother David Rauscher, when he lived in Dallas, but he lives in Seattle now, but he saw my ring, and we started talking. So it's cool to see that kind of thing happen. And I would love to see that happen. It's actually a dream of mine to see more of a call, more of a community within a community in Masonry.
To play devil's advocate, if you will, what if this is like breeding, how do we curb like dangerous tribalism?
Can you elaborate, please?
Sure. So for instance, you know, like in our political spectrum today in the United States, right, we've got this kind of danger. Yeah, probably not, right? It's just a duality. So we've got this far-reaching left, far-reaching right, and almost to the point where they touch, right? They go all the way around the globe, and they're so far apart, but yet so close if they just turn around. And I think we've got kind of this nationalistic identity kind of thing going on where for 4 years, right, we had this kind of America first and a lot of like patriotism and things. And then we see this kind of pop up, I think, within not just Masonry, I think, but like in groups of people. There tend to be divisions of people that all of a sudden say us and them, right? It's their tribe versus their tribe. And they start separating people. Is there a danger to creating subgroups within Masonry that undermine brotherhood as we know it?
I love that question. I love that question because in a year from now, when I get my undergraduate degree in literature and high school English certification, I will be getting my going to graduate school to get Holocaust studies. So I understand a lot of that kind of stuff. And in Masonry, I would feel that it would bring certain brothers closer. It wouldn't separate. It wouldn't segregate certain brothers, but it would bring other brothers closer who haven't known each other. Because, for example, my group, I never knew there were brothers in Australia who were Orthodox or Jewish. I knew there were brothers in New York, but I'd never met them. So in a way, this is a good way to have more of a stronger bond within our Masonic Brotherhood. And I want to say I firmly believe that having a strong community of the same believers within Masonry would not undermine Masonry. It would make it stronger. However, I do understand the devil's advocate approach, which would have certain brothers be like, I don't want to be around that brother because he believes something different. What we do is we put Masonry in front when we're at lodge. For example, me being Jewish, another brother's Muslim. We both know the issues in the Middle East right now. I met that brother and he gave a talk on the Holocaust and Masons. And he mentioned he's Muslim. Afterwards, I shook his hand and I said, great speech, brother. As a Jew and someone going to Holocaust studies, I love your speech. Thank you. Nothing else was said except thank you. Thank you, brother. So I don't believe that brothers who start their own community would undermine Masonry. They would just feel a stronger bond with other brothers who they never met.
I think the way you put that is really interesting just because it kind of reaffirms something that I felt, which is that number one, foundational to Freemasonry is the acceptance of all of our brothers under the same roof. So I love you, you love me, I cry with you, I celebrate with you, you're my brother. And then
remember what we did in EA degree, in whom do you place your trust?
Right.
Everyone has the same answer. Well, I've heard Jesus Christ, but I mean, again, that being said, we all believe in the big daddy upstairs.
Right. So with that, I mean, it's kind of like, okay, we've got this foundational thing that we all share, and it's kind of like, oh yeah, we all went to Harvard. I was a member of this club and you were a member of that club, but you know what? We all went to Harvard, like whatever the case is.
Yeah.
And so I think you're right. I think it has the potential to create stronger bonds and community and support. And I think the Masonic Lodge is a blending house. And then we do a lot of the great work together.
And I love how you brought up Harvard. I love how you brought up college because, okay, again, I'm in Texas where chili does not have beans, but there's a big college in Texas called University of Texas, the Longhorns. Do you know how many fraternities and sororities there are in that university? That's a niche within a niche. They're all Longhorns. They all root to be OU. I'm sorry, Oklahoma. The best thing about Oklahoma is the Oklahoma Indian degree team. Look them up. They're an awesome degree team. But from the students at UT who are part of different sororities and fraternities, they have that strong bond within each other, but they also have a strong bond when they leave Austin and they go to a different city, a different state, and they meet a fellow Longhorn. It's that strong bond. Masonry with different faiths. I think you put it great, Brother Johnson. It is a university with different sororities and fraternities within each other. So we have a bond and another bond at the same time.
Well, John, it's been awesome to be able to talk with you, that you were able to shed some light on a wide variety of different things that I'm sure are, you're no stranger to getting asked these questions. And maybe this helps out our brothers out there and maybe gives some clarification to non-members as well in terms of the connections and the sense of some of the obstacles they might come into contact with, not to say anti-Semitism or anything, but dealing with some of the things like the Sabbath and the things that go on in Masonry on Saturdays, or just a host of other things. And I think you've done a wonderful job of giving us some great insights here. I want to make sure that we get a link back to your Facebook group. Maybe you can say, we can say, hey, search up this group that, you know, if you meet the criteria, if you're a brother of the Jewish faith and you'd like to be a part of the group, we want to make sure you find Brother Sean and his group. So Brother Sean, I want to thank you one more time for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been a privilege and a complete honor to actually be a guest on your podcast. I am humbled and speechless would be the wrong word because I can't shut up. But thank you very much.
Yeah, the honor is all ours. And again, everybody listening, check the show notes for the links to everything. And we'll make sure that we get you in contact with Brother Sean. And big wishes for much more success in all of the things that you're doing, brother.
Tada rabba.
All right. I want to thank Brother Sean for coming on the program and giving his unique perspective, as I'm sure there are many Jewish brethren out there who have similar thoughts and similar issues that have come up in their Masonic journeys. And Freemasonry, for me, one of the large parts about it that I believe makes us better people is the ability to come together, converse, listen, and learn, and share perspectives. And there are things that I would not know about my fellow brother had they not told me their experience, right? And then imagine myself in their place and see how my feelings change about a topic based on their experience. Use a little bit of imagination here and see, right? And so gaining these perspectives then makes you a more empathetic person and thus a better man. So again, I want to thank Brother Sean for his excellent interview. If you guys have questions, comments, concerns, please don't be shy. Feel free to reach out to Brother Sean. And the link to the Facebook group will be back in the show notes as well. And I hope you guys really enjoy it. Lastly, before we let loose, I want to say that the latest issue of the Lyceum, the Illinois publication for Masonic education, is out. It's the May issue. The theme this month was mental health, as it is Mental Health Month. So we talked a little bit more about taking care of ourselves and some contemplative kind of ideas. So, all that being said, I want to thank you so much for joining me this week on the WCY podcast. We'll talk to you all next week. And until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.